This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
Opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team out, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
Now, welcome to the Press Pass here on KXL 189, 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. Tonight, presented by Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. Appreciate you joining us for the show. I am Chris Ryan. We'll do Patriots and Celtics here in the opening segment of the program. Then our resident sports expert, Dave D'Onofrio, will join us on the program to discuss the Pats, the Celtics, and the Bruins. Key AFC East battle will take place on Saturday in Foxborough as the Buffalo Bills play the New England Patriots. Patriots at 11-3 atop the division, one game ahead of 10-4 Buffalo. The Pats are a game behind the Ravens for the top spot in the AFC. New England and Buffalo have both clinched playoff appearances, but obviously fighting for the division title. The lone meeting so far this year between the Pats and the Bills took place in Buffalo. The Patriots won 16-10. Here's Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman, who says this game is what NFL football is all about.
This is why you play football, is for these types of games. It's a big-time game against a very, very good opponent that's playing very well. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you're not urgent and you got to be told to be urgent, yeah, you're in the wrong job.
Patriots wide receiver Philip Dorsett says they don't need to be told how important Saturday's game is.
This is a big game. We all know that. They know that. Everybody in the building knows it. This is for the division. So a hat t-shirt game. And we just got to put our best foot forward and just go out there and just play as hard as we can.
Patriots cornerback Stephon Gilmore says that it feels like the postseason starts now.
I mean, it's part of it. It's like a playoff game. You know, we just got to keep preparing this week and keep trusting each other and go out and give it all we got on Saturday.
Let's check in on the Boston Celtics now here on the Press Pass, presented by Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. And the Boston Celtics at 18-7, taking on the Detroit Pistons inside the TD Garden here as we do the show on Friday. Pre-game coverage at 7 and the game time at 7:30 for that contest. Celtics coming off a win in Dallas, which they didn't defend all that well. And Celtics defense has been kind of good throughout the course of the year, but a little bit touch and go lately. And with the key injuries this squad is facing to Gordon Hayward as well as Marcus Smart, defense is where they need to hang their hat at this point in time. Here's Celtics head coach Brad Stevens to talk with him about that with the group, and also a couple more questions for Brad.
Well, there was a lot. You know, sometimes you say something and you're like, it might have been a little strong. I think that was pretty accurate. So I think that we have to improve. I thought it was stuff that we have done well before, so I'm not as concerned about it from the standpoint of technicalities. But I think we just have to be more in tune, more alert as a group to handle. You know, we're asking a lot of these guys. We're switching a ton. You have to know. You don't go into a game having to know one spot. You have to go into a game knowing everybody that's a perimeter player if you're a switcher. You know, our bigs we ask a lot of to make sure we read late switches and those types of things. Like, we just have to all be on our toes to be a good defensive team. And when we're down guys, like, that's going to be one of the most important things we can be, is, you know, being able to do that. We have not guarded the three as well, has been well documented, as well as we should be with all of our versatility.
What has led to the growth in scoring from Brown and Tatum this year in your view?
I mean, I don't know. I think they're improving at the right rate, but I've always thought that was the case, and so they're good players. They obviously there's more opportunity across our team this year than there was last year. But the most important thing is not necessarily the growth in total scoring or even, you know, game to game. It's just you see the different ways that they can be put in position to now take advantage of defense. And they're still getting better. They still have a lot of, you know, they still are far from their ceilings. But, you know, obviously very good players.
Did you anticipate the role that Tice has had this year and the way that he is played?
We anticipated it being almost like hockey subs at the five. We're really lucky that Tice has played the way that he's played. I think that we have all known that Tice has always lifted our team. He's always given us good energy when he's come in. I don't think he was at Baines and Al's level in the first 2 years, but I thought that he was, you know, clearly impacted our team really well, and I think that he's played great thus far this year. And right now we're leaning on him and Canner a lot, and will be, you know, for the foreseeable future.
All right, now we're going to talk with Enes Kanter, who's a remarkable individual. He is wanted by Turkey for speaking out against the country, and is a individual that his family is still there. He's basically an exile. And again, wanted because of the fact that he is exercising his free speech rights that in this country that he does not have back in Turkey. And here is my conversation with the Celtics big man.
And as I'm curious as to how much you've enjoyed your experience in Boston so far, because you seem like somebody who has completely embraced this.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. Definitely. I mean, just for the first couple months, they picked me the Bostonian of the Year. So that shows a lot. But I think it's fun because it's not just a basketball city. It's a very influential, how do you say it?
Influential
town. People know what's going on and off the court. I remember, like, some of the cities I played for, they were coming and telling me, like, oh, hey, good game last night. But here, they come in and say, oh, good op-ed last night, good article yesterday. We read everything, what's going on. So it gives me a lot of hope.
You've spoken out in the past, and your story is obviously an incredibly intriguing one. But do you feel that this has been kind of the time period? Maybe it has to do with the politics of, you know, Turkey and what's taken place, obviously, in Syria. But do you feel like that piece of your life has come more to fruition here? And do you think Boston has something to do with that?
Oh, yeah, Buffalo, for sure. Because I'm obviously here. I'm really close with Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey, mm-hmm. Sanders, and they've been amazingly helpful, everything. We actually just put a bill out there in the Senate. So if it passed, it's going to be awesome. But I think, you know, just, I mean, everybody here got my back. Just met with, like, the Harvard president a couple of weeks ago. And hang out with, like, the politicians in here and stuff. And it's been an awesome experience.
And for those who are not familiar, basically an exile from Turkey, mm-hmm. and your family's there and so forth. Was there a fear initially in talking out about these things? Or were you always able to, you know, confront this? Mm-hmm.
No fear. You got to stay brave if you're going to talk about these issues, because, you know, I know what I'm doing is right, because I'm going out there and try to be voice of all those innocent people who don't have one, and especially when all those people suffering out there, I cannot stay just quiet and silence, you know. So what I'm doing is very important, I think, and there's no fear.
I want to ask you from a basketball perspective now, too. It seems kind of trite in the light of that. But from a basketball perspective, how have things gone here? The team has obviously been great. You've had some injury issues, but now it seems like you've found a role.
Oh, well, yeah, for sure, man. I mean, obviously, it's a winning culture. So every time we're going out there, we're trying to win. We're not trying to lose. So that's a plus. But I think the other thing is we are having fun. We're playing hard. We're playing smart. We're having fun out there. We can better every game.
And it seems like your role as the energy guy, rebounding and such, is such an important part of this team. Obviously, losing Baines and Horford, there needs to be that influence. Right. Did it take time to kind of figure out your role within this group, or did you come in and have a feeling for what that role was going to be?
I mean, Coach Brennan, Danny Ainge told me what my role was beginning of the year. You know, they told me just bring a lot of energy, a lot of physicality, go get a rebound and just set picks and roll. And that's what I've been doing.
The culture within the locker room is a lot of fun. Yes. And culture in terms of the diversity of individuals and the backgrounds, but also despite the differences in language and where people come from, like the way that you all bond together. Is that different than you've been in other teams? Is it different than other teams you've been on in how positive it is? Mm-hmm. Or is this basically an NBA type culture?
I mean, yes, it's all definitely so much fun, because I mean, I feel like what matters off the court more important than what happens on the court, because we all basketball players, we're going to go out there and just play basketball and score the ball. But I think our chemistry is so important because it's going to make us better friend and better teammate on the court. So that's what I've been working on the last two, three months to just have a better friendship, better chemistry, and go out there and just have fun.
Yeah, there's always been that debate about that, like whether the off-the-court stuff leads to on-the-court. Yes. But if you trust one another and are all looking for the same goal and the outside, you know, influences of saying, oh, you need to have a bigger role on the team, that dynamic of being together, if you don't have that, I don't see how teams, you know, can they can have success but not the same type of success and the same type of enjoyable success.
I definitely agree because I mean, like I said again, if you're not going to have fun, if you want to win a championship, man, everything matters. On the court, off the court, how good of a friends or for friendship happen off the court. So it's very important.
Thanks, Ennis. Thank you, appreciate it.
Yep,
see you soon. That is Ennis Kanter. This is the Press Pass here on KXL 1059, 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show. Coming up next in the program, our resident sports expert, Dave D'Onofrio from Boston.com. This is the Press Pass here on KXL tonight, presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. This segment of the show brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices, NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For more information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. Joining us right now on the program is our resident sports expert. He is Dave D'Onofrio. Dave, how are you?
Doing good, thanks.
Good. Dave joins us from Boston.com. We'll talk some Patriots and Bills to start things off today, and on cue, woman just walks by the studio here in a Tom Brady jersey. It's a little cold for that today, just to have the jersey on, but for some reason, she is not daunted by the temperatures. Anyway, Patriots-Bills this weekend. What are your feelings going into this game? I feel that the Bills simply do not have enough to threaten the Patriots in this contest. Maybe threaten is a little bit of a exaggeration there. They do not have enough to win this contest. And I don't think that Josh Allen can come in and beat the Patriots. I think the Bills' defense is good. But I think that the Patriots' defense is going to turn the Bills over, and I think that they're going to create an opportunity for them to have success from an offensive perspective, somewhat similar to what we saw in Cincinnati this last week.
I agree with that, and I think you have two teams that are probably closer and more similar than Patriots fans would be comfortable with. I mean, that they both have really good defenses. They both have offenses that struggle to score at times. But the difference is the turnovers. And, you know, Brady hasn't had a great season. Brady wasn't great last week by any means. We've talked about that was probably his worst game of the year. He's hurt, it seems. Edelman's hurt, it seems. But generally speaking, and until proven otherwise, they hold on to the football. They protect the ball. That's what the Patriots' offensive role in this has become, is keep the ball, don't do anything too bad. If you look at the games that they have lost, those were games they did give up, you know, defensive scores or made bad special teams plays. But when they play a clean game, the defense is good enough. The offense is functional enough that they can hold on. And I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't think it's going to be a lopsided score by any means, but it just comes down to me which team is going to make more mistakes, and I think that's the Bills.
I agree with that. I think that the Patriots will manage the football, and I think that their defense and their special teams will be what wins this game for them. And, you know, I think that what you're describing here with the difficulty of the Patriots offense and now the injuries to Brady and Edelman, which seem to be, you know, substantive. We're worried about this, obviously, over the last number of weeks where Brady has been taking a beating. He's 42 years of age, and he is having to scramble and is being hit more than probably at any other point during his career. And that has created, in my view, an injury situation for Tom Brady. And I think that that is deeply problematic for them moving forward. The best case scenario for them, obviously, is for the Patriots to win and the Chiefs to lose. so that they can look at the final game of the season as, you know, basically an opportunity to rest Brady and to rest Edelman and give them, you know, 2 weeks off going into the playoff game. Because other than that, I mean, we don't know who the Patriots are going to play, obviously, in that playoff game at this point, but I think that that's going to be a big challenge for the Patriots, given that we have not seen the offense take off. And, you know, again, we'll see who they play, and matchups are a big part of this. And their defense is, you know, perhaps taking a couple steps back from the middle point of the season, but their defense is still phenomenal, and they force turnovers, and so does their special teams. So if it's the right matchup, I think that they can win the divisional round. But I still think that automatically assuming the Patriots are going to win because of the Patriots and they're at home is not necessarily going to come to fruition.
I'm with you. And that's why this weekend is, it's not about the AFC East. Yes, if Buffalo comes in here and wins, they will technically be tied to the AFC East championship going into the final week of the season. But Patriots play Miami. You've got to count that as a win, especially at home, especially against a team that has nothing to play for. And the Patriots would have the tiebreakers. Even though the season series was split, goes to common opponents eventually, and that's where the Patriots would win. So, you know, the East is over. That's not what's at stake here. What's at stake here is the number two seed. They need to win in order to stay ahead of Kansas City, because Kansas City's one game behind and has a tiebreaker on the Patriots. So you can, and I say this every year, you can count a bye as a playoff win, in my mind. It gets you through the wild card weekend, either way, whether you have to play it and win it, or whether you've earned the bye. So that's really what the Patriots are playing for the right to do. And then you get to the divisional round, and I think we saw last year, I was among those who thought the Chargers might come in Foxborough and win. They were rolling. Patriots had sort of slumped in December with those two losses in Pittsburgh and Miami. But the Patriots figured it out. They put together a great game plan. They executed almost flawlessly, and they blew out the Chargers. So once you get into that second round, into the divisional round, it's basically, okay, play a home game against a team that you're probably better than. Then, yes, in this case, they probably would have to go to Baltimore and win. But anyone can beat anyone in a week, in any given week. If Julian Edelman doesn't fumble in Baltimore in October or November, whenever that was, looked like the Patriots were going in for a go-ahead score in the second half. So, you know, get the bye, take advantage of the first-round matchup. It's no given by any means, but I think you can scheme it up and you can play good defense and you can take advantage of the rest and all that. Then you get in the championship game and you just see what happens. And then you win that, and just like last year, you go to the Super Bowl with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and all that comes with that, and you feel good about it, your chances.
No, I think that that's a I think that's a really good point. And things can obviously go the other way as well. But, yeah, I mean, last year the Kansas City game was a case in point where, yeah, I liked the Patriots against the Chargers, but going into Kansas City, it didn't necessarily feel that great about things, and but thought the same scenario could take place that you're describing here. So, yeah, I mean, it's the difference, obviously, between this and other sports is it's one game. And in that one game, matchups can be found and success can be had. And we have seen the history of this group with Belichick and Brady and McDaniels being able to figure out exactly how to have success in this in these contests. So the opportunity certainly is there. And yeah, you are right. I mean, the Patriots are going to win the division. The division is not, you know, on the line, despite the talk of this being a playoff game and so forth. It is an incredibly meaningful game because of the opportunity to have that bye, which they're desperately going to need, and to have that the divisional round home game. All those things are very, very important for the Patriots at this point in time. And you know, I think the talk has been strong out of Foxborough this week. But again, the problem that I have and the concern that I have with the Patriots is that they still have not found themselves from an offensive perspective. And we saw them run the ball a little bit better last week. But, you know, putting it was almost a foregone conclusion in years past that you would see so many of those quality Patriots drives where they just had short pass here, running play, screen, Gronk over the middle. I mean, it would just flow, and there was a chemistry, there was a cohesiveness, and this year it's been, you know, stop, start, stop, stop, start. I mean, there's not been any point in time, you know, really since the extreme early portion of the season in which you have felt really good about the Patriots offense.
Yeah, even that extreme early point in the season, they felt compelled to bring in Antonio Brown to the mix. Remember, that was, they did score 33 against Pittsburgh, but they brought Antonio Brown in the day before that. So they came out of training camp with questions and curious and wondering if this was enough. And as the season's gone on, it's just mind-boggling to me that we've reached December 20th, and we don't know. It's December 20th. The Patriots play tomorrow. They have a lot on the line, and we have no clue what they're going to do offensively or what they should do offensively or what might work offensively. And it's not one of those years when you look at it and you're like, wow, they can do so many things that the opponent doesn't know what they're going to do. It's the opposite. It's they can do nothing. They've proven that they can do nothing. And now the injuries are adding up, and the two most reliable guys you have, Brady and Edelman, are not reliable from a health perspective. And you just look at the road, and the only road to championship number 7 is the one we talked about, where you scrape out a bye here in the next couple of weeks, you have a good matchup, you put together your best game of the year, and then you kind of, you know, come down to a one-game season. Other than that, I mean, logically speaking, this team is middle of the road. Well, maybe not entirely middle of the road, but upper middle class, not elite by any means.
I agree with that. This is Dave Denofre, resident sports expert, joining us here on Hampshire Now, 1450 and NHTuckRadio.com. This hour of the program is presented by AARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and this segment of the program presented by Concord Orthopedics, as well as Parker Education and Gibson's Bookstore, as we talk Patriots and now transition into the Celtics and Bruins. You know, we've talked about it with the Celtics so far this year. The Celtics have been so consistently impressive throughout the course of this season. And, you know, a season which began with questions and, you know, I would say kind of an apathy about the Celtics and, you know, what role they were going to play in our, you know, nighttime entertainment moving forward throughout the course of this year. Like, it might have been better to, you know, to watch some of the old Office episodes as opposed to watching the Celtics going into the season. But that has changed. Like, the Celtics are now, you know, pretty much appointment television this year. And I think that is, you know, obviously the goal is to win a championship, and the goal is to be a championship caliber team. We could talk about how far the Celtics are from that. But I would say that this season has been kind of a blessing.
Absolutely. I mean, it's gone from, well, that stinks. They lost Kyrie and Horford. They're now back where they were 3 years ago. They're a second-rate organization. They're a good team, scrappy team, all that. To a team that, you know, they haven't even had their full complement yet. I mean, I think the stat is, what, 5 minutes where they've had Smart, Hayward, Brown, Tatum, and Walker on the floor in the whole season. And the record is what it is, and, you know, they've won some of the games they've won. Yeah, Doncic was out the other night, but to go to Dallas against a pretty good team and it still had Porzingis and a couple other good players and win that game, that's a good road win. And you look where they are in the East and how they're holding up, and, you know, then you look at what's going on elsewhere. Every team except Milwaukee, I don't think you can make the case any of them are better than the Celtics. So you just look at it and you feel good.
That is a really key point, and something I was thinking about, you know, the other day. I mean, Milwaukee is in a class all their own, but, you know, the Celtics, despite, you know, what we thought going into the season, are a championship caliber team. I mean, there is nobody that is way, way ahead of them at this point in time, and I don't think that we thought that going into the year. I think that we thought the Sixers are going to be way ahead of them. We thought that the Bucks are going to be way ahead of them. Some of the teams out west be way ahead of them, but I don't see that. The two big surprises this year have actually been the Celtics and the Lakers. I wasn't sure how the Lakers situation was going to work, and in fact, I was, you know, a little bit more thinking that it was not going to work than it was. And, you know, obviously they have played better than expected last night aside. So the Celtics and the Lakers have been the two big surprises to me in the league this year, because I thought the Celtics would be a playoff team, but I thought that, you know, they were going to struggle to find themselves defensively, and the loss of Horford was going to be pretty significant. And, you know, the way that Walker has played, Tatum, Brown, they basically, going into the season, I thought they had to perform at an incredibly high level, like 20 points a game each, Walker a little bit more than that, Hayward needed to be near there, and have like 80 points a game amongst those top four players. And I thought that was going to be a bit of a reach, but it's come to fruition.
Yeah, that's Kemba Walker is a better player than I thought. And I thought he was just like a scorer. And yeah, he can absolutely score very well, and he'll get you the points you need. But, you know, you feel good with the ball in his hands. And that was the case with Kyrie, too. And people, I think, forget how great Kyrie was when he was on the court last year. But you haven't lost much. You haven't really taken a huge step back there. And I'm with you on the Lakers. I didn't think they were going to put it together as quickly as they did. But as a true Celtics lifer, I'm hoping that what the Lakers turn into is like a late-stage Peyton Manning, where like LeBron looks amazing for the first half, and like 60% of the season everyone thinks he's the MVP. And then all of a sudden the wheels kind of fall off, and he can't complete a pass more than 20 yards downfield by the end of the year. So that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping by the spring, you know, Kawhi, Paul George, James Harden, all the other big dogs in the West get past LeBron, and LeBron's just doing it now, trying to prove something.
Yeah, I think that's a decent point. We'll conclude with the Bruins here. Your takeaways on what we've seen from the Bruins as of late?
The most frustrating thing to me is they can't win a shootout, or they can't win an overtime. And it's just mind-boggling to me, because yeah, they get 1 point out of it, and like the other night when they blow a lead against the Kings and lose in the extra time, those are points that if you're in their position and where you want to be, those you need those points, and they kind of just give them away way too frequently, and they have way too much skill to be so bad at shootouts, at penalty shots. I don't understand it. Do they not practice it? I assume they practice it, but they can't win any of those, and that's, you know, by the end of the year at this pace, they're going to lose, you know, 12, 15 points just based on the inability to do that individual skill. When you look at the individual players and you're like, yeah, they have skill. What's going on? I don't get it. I don't like it.
That's a really good point. What's interesting, though, is that we have seen very often this year them score, you know, big goals late in games when they have to. It's not like they're not clutch players.
Right.
But when you put them in the three-on-three setting or in the shootout setting, it becomes problematic for some reason. And I know for a fact that they work on this, and that they are, you know, you would expect that David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand, you know, and others would be able to find ways to score. But I think that, you know, the skill level aspect of things, like Marchand and Pastrnak are great skilled players, but do the Bruins have, you know, other guys that you can rely on in a breakaway setting that are going to be able to find goals? I mean, a lot of those guys are, you know, grinders, one-time type of guys, puck in front of the net, you know, that will score beyond the top, you know, the top scorers. Even Bergeron is, you know, Bergeron's a good player, but he's not a guy that's, you know, an individual effort to the goal type of player. So I think that, you know, the notion that the Bruins have this plethora of great skilled goal scorers is perhaps a little off.
Yeah, probably. But on the other side, I look at McAvoy, I look at Krug, I look at DeBrusk.
I get it.
Even Corrali, I look at guys like that, and I'm like, I've seen you do things with your hands on the ice that I've seen you do in traffic. Can we just do it without a defender? Like,
right. Not
I don't know, maybe it's that they don't shoot well enough, and the goalie doesn't have to respect the chance that you're going to snap one off from 25 feet. I don't know.
All right, that's Dave D'Onofrio, resident sports expert. Dave, as always, appreciate joining us for the program.
Thank you.
That is Dave D'Onofrio from Boston.com. This is the Press Pass here on KXL tonight, presented by Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. And that segment of the show brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health. This is the Press Pass here on KXL Tonight, presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. This segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. More information, check out prescription-center.com. I want to remind you, hockey interviews on the program presented by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Get your youngster playing hockey with ConcordYouthHockey.org. We're joined by Nick here at Pat's Peak, as Pat's Peak opened for the season this past weekend. And you know, Pat's Peak is awesome because so many people in this region grew up learning how to ski here. For my kids, you know, they were part of the Learn to Ski program, and now they've become better skiers and still love coming to Pat's Peak, though. And Nick, kind of take us through what the opening of the season is like for you guys. You start to blow up more trails.
Yep. So our snowmakers are always hard at work getting the trails as covered as they can. It's always weather dependent, but when they get the weather for it, it's crazy how much snow they can really put out here. So we're opening with 10 trails right now, and we got some great runs both on the valley side for some of the more beginner stuff, and a couple trails over on the main mountain as well.
Yeah, I like the trails you guys picked to open up here on the larger hill as well. One, Black Diamond and Cyclone. I think Duster East Wind is the other one that is open at this point. So how do you guys pick which trails you're going to open up with? Because obviously there's off the top of the hill, there's a green trail down as well. You guys picked the blue and the black, and over on the valley side is where the green trails are open.
Well, we want to make sure that obviously there's something for everyone. So kind of over in the valley area, that's where we usually have our more beginner trails, and over on the main mountain side, we have a little bit more advanced stuff, just because if we're getting started, we want to make sure that we can get a certain amount of trails open, and some of these trails are some of the shorter trails, so they're easier to kind of fill out with snow. And then once we get that, it's easier to get more trails and more terrain open when we kind of start off with with those trails. And then again, over on the main side of the mountain as well, it kind of varies. You know, sometimes they'll choose certain trails over others certain years. But I think this year we just put in a whole new snowmaking system and electrical line up Cyclone. So I think they were really excited to do that one as well. And that's probably one of the reasons why that trail is open this year for opening day.
Yeah, you guys have invested a lot in infrastructure here over the last couple of years. The Cascade Basin opened up a couple years back, probably about 6 or 7 years at this point.
Yeah.
And you know, we see more in terms of the lodge investment in that, and also you mentioned the snowmaking system, which is so important, which allows for you to keep good conditions and also to allow for the season to extend both in terms of the opening now and also later on in the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the lodge as well. The lodge has been great to watch up going up over the summer. That started off at the very end of last season, putting the cement pad down, and then once the spring hit, you saw the post and beam go up. And over the past month or two, they just put all the walls up and everything, and we're really looking forward to about sometime, hopefully in December, opening that up to the public. But yeah, I mean, every single year, our general manager, Chris Blombeck, is always trying to invest in just everything that he possibly can to make this mountain better.
Yeah, Pat's Peak is so much fun because it's proximity to Concord, and also it's a place where all age groups can ski together. And again, it's a great learner's mountain for my kids and even for me. I didn't really start skiing until I was around 30, and this and Loon were the two spots where I learned. So I'm noticing now that it seems like there's as many, if not more, boarders and skiers. Is that a trend that the industry is seeing, is it transitioning more towards boarders? It seems like it kind of comes and goes. I remember back, in the 2000s, it was snowboarding was where things were heading, and skiing was
very popular,
so, and then it kind of went away a little bit and they evened out. Is boarding coming back more than it did before?
You know, I haven't seen any numbers to really know if it is or not, but I mean, this season, especially at the beginning of the season, I've definitely noticed a whole lot more boarders on the hill, which has been pretty cool. I mean, generally, I think it's like, 70-30, I think is what the average has been. Don't quote me on that. Yeah, skiers to snowboarders. But yeah, I mean, like, it always kind of fluctuates, and it's been really interesting to see as many snowboarders on the hill as there are right now.
So does the boarder usually show up and just want to do that, or have they skied and then they want to try something new and they like it, or how many individuals do both? You're a boarder, I'm a skier, I don't snowboard. You, I think, have skied before.
I do ski, yeah, occasionally. I think it all comes down to everyone's preference. You know, some people prefer, you know, they feel more comfortable kind of maybe like facing the mountain head on, whereas like some people that maybe have skateboarded before might feel more comfortable with kind of like that sideways
or type surfed
movement or surfed. Yeah. But I think it really comes down to personal preference, and like sometimes it's easier to pick up one over the other, and then, you know, the other one might have just like had that aha moment and clicked with a certain person. But I think there comes to a point too where maybe you have tried one for a while and you might branch off in another one and then find that you really like it. Or, you know, you might stick with skiing or snowboarding, or even snow biking.
Yeah, that's I've seen that on the hill here a couple times before, and that's pretty interesting. I think that particularly for kids, like once they've mastered one thing, like Brennan, my 7-year-old, we're going to hear from in a second. Like, he wants to snowboard now because he thinks he's mastered skiing.
Yep.
And so he wants to try something new. So I think that's kind of how, you know, if you grow up around the mountain, that's kind of how the mindset goes. But yeah, it's both are really interesting. And if you have, you know, surfed before or skateboarded before, there's kind of that natural transition into snowboarding. As we're headed towards the top of the hill, we're going to take a brief break here on the program, then bring in the kids. We're going to go down Cyclone, which is one of the Black Diamonds off of the main mountain here. Anything else that's going on here that people should know about as you guys begin the season?
We're just excited to be open and have some natural snow coming towards us right now. Seems like the weather report's telling us we might get a good dump of snow, which we're all pretty excited.
Joined by my sons Liam and Brennan and Nick from Pat's Peak.
We are atop Pat's Peak, and one of the great things about skiing is always the view. Looking out on the horizon here and seeing the hills and mountains here in the great state of New Hampshire. Joined by Nick as Pat's Peak opened up this past weekend, and Brennan and Liam, my two sons, here as well, as we all enjoy skiing together. And Brennan has a question for Nick. Go ahead, Bren.
How do you make these Pat's Peak tags?
What's that?
How do you make these Pat's Peak tags?
Where do the tags come from? Like, Bren loves to collect the different tags that you get. You come to the mountain, says what day you were there, and so how do those get made?
So basically we get kind of like rolls of the blank tickets, and they come in, they go through a printer, and depending on the day, they'll put in the information, it'll print out the tag for your day, and then they give it to you, and they fold it in half on that little metal thing called a wicket, and then they're good to go and slide down the slopes.
Awesome. And so one of the questions that Brent had, we went to Loon a couple weeks ago, and he was able to stump the guide, was how do you go about determining what the names are for the trails? Each trail has a different name, and also the designations, too, where some trails are green, mm-hmm. some trails are blue, some trails are black diamonds, some trails are double black diamonds. How do you go about determining which trail is named what and what designation it gets?
Okay, so I'm not sure exactly why at the beginning they started, but they came up with a theme. They wanted to have Pat's Peak themed with wind names. Actually, now that I think about it, it was because people would have the ability to kind of understand the difficulty of the trail based on how strong of a wind name it was. So, like, you know, Duster, Cyclone, Tornado. Tornado's a double black diamond.
Right.
And, you know, so so that kind of, like, was the theme was put in place to help people understand kind of, like, what the difficulty of each trail might be.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And to actually determine what is a green circle, a blue square, black diamond, etc., there's actually kind of a formula that's laid out. I think it's some sort of standardization amongst most mountains, and it has something to do with the steepness of the pitch, and it can have some steeper bits, but only for like so much feet. There has to be like some sort of average. I'm not sure what the exact numbers and specifications of it are, but there is some sort of standardization of how they determine how to rate trails like that.
In layman's terms, basically, the green trail is the easiest. Mm-hmm. The blue trail will have some areas where it's very steep, but you get a break generally in the middle a couple mm-hmm. of times, and then there's
the Black Diamonds, we're going to go on the Cyclone, which is steep pretty much throughout, and you don't get a break. And the difference, obviously, is in bigger mountains, trails can be more difficult just because they're longer and such. So it's generally easiest is green, but a green in one place is different than a green in another place, and so forth.
It can definitely be, yes.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to do Cyclone right now, and we're going to ski down there a little bit and then catch up with Nick in the middle, see if Liam can think of a question. We're here at Pat's Peak in Henniker, the only Henniker on Earth, and we absolutely love skiing here at Pat's Peak, only 30 minutes from downtown Concord, a place that we've enjoyed coming, and the kids have grown to ski here on this mountain. So we're about halfway down Cyclone, and you know, one of the questions that I think you always have when you're learning to ski is, at what point are you ready to move from one designation to the other? We've talked about the four that exist here. And, you know, Cyclone is very steep, but, you know, it's one that is certainly manageable in my view if you're doing the blues. So, but there's that, you know, for individuals who are, you have trepidation about skiing, there's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't move on to the black. How do you know when you're ready for that, basically?
Well, it really comes down to comfortability. You can go down a trail, and if you're not comfortable with it, you know, maybe you want to take a step back and go on an easier trail. Or if you're just learning something specifically, sometimes staying on some of the easier trails allows you to be able to practice a skill in a little bit easier of an environment, so you can take that next step onto the next trail. So it really comes down to comfortability, and if you're in a lesson, kind of the advice of an instructor.
How do you make the snow?
How do they make the snow? Well, we have lots of kind of like machinery around the mountain. They kind of look like big long poles with kind of these orange caps on the end of them, and they also have these kind of tube-like things up there called fan guns. And between the different kinds of equipment, it all comes down to two things: air and water. They'll take water and spray it into a fine mist, and they'll blow air through it, and that helps kind of cool it down rapidly and crystallize it and turn it into snow. And then by the time it reaches the ground, it's what you see here on the ground.
There you go. How do you, you know, judge conditions too if you're coming to the mountain? Because obviously it's better to ski on snow than on icy snow. And you know, pretty much it's difficult to determine exactly what the conditions are going to be until you are on the hill. So what's the best way to know what the type of conditions are going to be that day? Obviously here, you know, as the show broadcasts on Monday, it's snowing out. It's a good day to go skiing.
Right.
But in other times, how do you determine whether it's a good time to come or not come?
Well, it really depends on, you know, again, comfortability too. Some snow conditions might be easier for beginners, like freshly made snow, or, you know, when you've had a snowstorm, it's usually maybe the day after. That's really good conditions for like a beginner. Whereas, you know, your advanced riders, you can ride on more kind of variable conditions, like in deep powder, in kind of like spring skiing conditions, which I love personally.
Same.
Yeah, it really comes down to, you know, again, comfortability. And also, like, if you're wondering what the conditions are at the hill, the most mountains will have like a snow phone that'll have conditions, and you can usually find conditions online as well. And some mountains will also have like a snow report video or some sort of thing that they'll post regularly.
How do you pick the spot, like where it is?
How they determine to have the hill here as opposed to any of the other hills that surround us? How do they pick the spot for a ski mountain?
Well, it all comes down to if you have the mountain, I guess.
If you own it.
it was just a choice, I think, by the owners, the Patinons. They had the property. It was a great spot to put a ski area, and they had the desire to put a ski area there. So there it went.
Anything? Well, Nick, as always, appreciate your time. We look forward to skiing here throughout the year at Pat's Peak. It's such a awesome place for people in and around Concord to learn to ski and begin their process of enjoying the winter here in New Hampshire. Because as somebody who came here from New York, you know, there's two things you can do. You can complain about the winter and just sit inside, or you can go and enjoy the outdoors. And I encourage everybody to enjoy everything that is to offer here at Pats Peak.
Definitely. I'm excited the winter's finally here. It's been a long summer. Not to say it wasn't a great summer, but I definitely love the winters.
I am totally with you. Like, we are counting day on the days to winter. And other people think we're nuts, but that is who we are.
But they don't understand us.
They don't get it. They just don't get it. All right, it's New Hampshire Now.
This is the Press Pass on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. Show tonight presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey, and that segment of the show presented by the Prescription Center.